"How are things going?" I asked, my voice sounding stilted.
"Fine."
"Good," I said. "And how's Polly?"
"She's fine, I guess."
"You guess?" I took a step inside his room. "You don't know?"
"Not really," he said, expressionless. "We broke up."
"I'm sorry. Can I ask why?" He sighed.
"I don't really want to talk about it, if that's okay."
I bit my lip and nodded. "Well, I also wanted to tell you that your father and I heard from Mr. Quarterman. Your honor council hearing is scheduled for next Tuesday."
"Yeah, I know," he said. "I got an email, too."
"Oh," I said. "Have you talked to Lila?"
"No."
"Why not?"
"Dad told me not to."
"He did," I said. "When did he tell you that?"
"Last week, after our meeting with Mr. Q."
"Well," I said briskly, "I'm overriding that. We're going to see her tomorrow morning, you and I. Her dad will be there, too. It will be the four of us." I braced myself for resistance, but he only nodded and said okay. "And in the meantime, I want you to think about Lila. Her feelings. This is about her right now."
"I know, Mom," he said, looking a little like his younger, earnest self.
"Do you?" I asked.
"Yeah."
"So you understand that this meeting with Lila is not a strategy for you. It's an apology to her." He nodded again.
"Yeah, Mom, I get it," he said, holding my gaze. Maybe he was humoring me or trying to avoid a lecture, but his expression really seemed sincere. It wasn't quite a relief. I was still worried about his character. But it was a very small consolation, and maybe even a source of hope.
"Are you sure you don't want to talk about Polly, or anything else going on in your life?" I gently pressed, feeling certain I knew what the answer would be.
"Yeah, Mom," he said. "I'm sure."
Chapter 13. Lila. On Friday night, right when I thought things couldn't get any worse, Dad came into my room and dropped another bomb on me. A stealth bomb. "Get some sleep," he said, standing in the doorway in a Titans t-shirt and sweatpants. "We have a meeting in the morning." "What kind of meeting?" I said, feeling suspicious, because we never had appointments and stuff on the weekends. Dad knows that I love to sleep in on Saturdays, and it really is my only day to do so, because he often guilt-trips me into going to Mass with Nona, who is sort of obsessed with being Catholic, on Sunday mornings. "Finch Browning and his mother are coming over," he said all nonchalantly, like I wasn't going to notice. I waited for the punchline, but there wasn't one. "What? Why?" I demanded. "To talk," he said, taking another step into my room and glancing down at a laundry basket filled with clean clothes that he'd put there and asked me to fold the night before. Usually he does that for me, or at least refolds everything after I do a shit job. Dad is totally OCD about the weirdest things, but I could tell he was trying to be stricter all of a sudden, as if his folding my laundry for me had been a contributing factor in my decision to drink at a party. "Talk about what?" I said, horrified. "What do you think, Lila?" he said. "I don't know, Dad," I said sarcastically as I could. "That's why I asked you, since you obviously set this up." "I would imagine, and this is just a wild guess, that we're going to talk about what Finch did to you," he said super calmly, and just as sarcastically. I'm not sure exactly what I pictured going down tomorrow, but he might as well have just suggested that the four of us sit naked around a table playing Monopoly. Like, I really couldn't think of anything more painfully awkward than rehashing what Finch did to me. "Wow. So you really are trying to completely ruin my life," I said. It actually felt like an understatement. I held my breath because I wasn't fooled. I knew that at any moment he could erupt. These days, my dad went from 0 to 100 in no time at all. Actually, There was never a zero anymore. He was always pretty amped up and ready to explode. Not at all, he said. I'm trying to be a good father. That's all. Yeah, well, good fathers don't usually try to destroy their daughters' lives. I'd finally pushed his button, so he made a huffing sound, then threw up his hands like a pissed-off cartoon dad and left the room mumbling. You must have me confused with your other parent. I almost chased after him to tell him to stop playing the martyr. I mean, yeah, I get that Mom completely sucked in the parenting department. But Mom's over-the-top sucking shouldn't give Dad extra credit for doing the same basic job that everyone else's parents were doing. I honestly couldn't believe I'd never thought to make the point before, and couldn't wait to lay it on him. But I couldn't make myself get up. So I just lay in bed, low-key crying, until Dad came back to my room, which I knew he would. He'd never stated aloud the don't-go-to-bed-mad rule, but he more or less followed it. He'd always at least come back to say a civil goodnight. I heard Nona once say that it was because he had a weak stomach for conflict, but I think it actually might have something to do with the way Mom left us. Neither one of them had ever been entirely clear about what had happened when she jetted off in the middle of the night, but I got the gist that they'd had a big fight over me. It was something about Mom drinking too much and almost letting me drown at a pool party. Though Mom insisted that I knew how to swim from a few lessons at the Y. Dad maintained that I'd only learned how to turn my face to the side to blow bubbles. Anyway, Dad was furious at her negligence, and she was pissed off at his judgmentalness, if that's even a word. She was so pissed off, in fact, that she left. For good. Your father made it clear that he thought you were both better off without me, and I suppose he was right, Mom told me, one of the times she came back. She was a master at painting herself as the victim, even when talking to me, her abandoned daughter. I almost pointed out that he wasn't beating her, like, being judgmental just isn't that drastic. At least not drastic enough to choose abandonment. And obviously she had another choice besides completely throwing in the towel. She could have proven Dad wrong, and tried to show him that she could be a responsible good mother. Instead, she kind of proved his case for him. As far as Dad goes, I think he can't help blaming himself just a little for the way things went down. And maybe he even thinks that if the two of them had had the don't-go-to-bed-mad rule, he could have convinced her to go to rehab or tried to figure their messed up shit out. I doubt it, and I bet Dad doubts it too. But I still wonder sometimes, and I bet he does too. In any case, when Dad came back in my room, I was glad, even though I was still really pissed. Before he could say anything or throw another pity party for himself, I went off. Look, Dad, I'm totally grateful to you for being a good father and everything, but this whole deal is really killing me. Killing you, he said, doing the calm routine again. It's just an expression, Dad. He nodded. Yes, I mean, honestly, the last thing I'd want to do in the world is sit down with the Brownings. Like, I'd rather walk through fire or pull my toenails out. It's not my idea of a good time either, Dad said. Then why are we doing it? Whose idea was it anyway? I asked. Nina's, he replied. Mrs. Browning's. I stared back at him, processing the information, as well as her name. Nina. It was so classy and elegant, totally fitting the memory I had of her from senior night at the last home basketball game, which was the only time I had ever seen her. Finch was one of four seniors on the team, so he'd walked out to mid-court before the game with both his parents. I don't remember anything about his dad, other than that he was tall like Finch. But I remember thinking his mother was so pretty and stylish. She was petite, with shoulder-length honey blonde hair, and her outfit was so good. Dark denim, knee-high boots, and an ivory cape with a fringe of pom-poms. She called you? I asked. I couldn't help being a little intrigued by their exchange. She emailed me, Dad said. He glanced down at the laundry basket again, then walked over to the edge of my bed. When? I said. This business of him keeping secrets was another thing that had changed between us. Although, to be fair, that worked both ways. There was plenty of stuff I hid from him, too. And not just the drinking. He finally sat down and put his hand on my foot, squeezing it through my fuzzy sock. I instinctively pulled my knees up, hugging them to my chest. He looked hurt or offended. Maybe both, as he said. A few days ago, he paused. Then we met for coffee. Well, that's super weird, I said, in part because it just was, and in part because my dad never meets anyone for coffee. What's so weird about it? He said, with an odd look on his face, because he totally knew it was weird, too. Besides, like, everything? I said. He shrugged. Okay, maybe a little. But we had a pretty decent talk. Great, I said, rolling my eyes. I'm so happy for you. Don't be a smartass, Lila. I'm not. I am glad you had a good talk and all. But can't that be a rapsky? I said, using one of my dad's expressions. No, it can't be a rapsky, Dad said. Why not? Because this boy owes you an apology, Lila. It's important. It's important we all sit down together and talk about this. Nina and I agree on that. Okay. But why do we have to meet here? What's wrong with meeting here? He said, sounding so defensive. Are you ashamed of where you live? No, I said, which was sort of a lie. Ever since I started at Windsor in the 9th grade and realized how much money people around me had, I actually was a little embarrassed about our neighborhood and house. Of course, I was even more embarrassed for feeling this way. It's just awkward, I said again, trying to spare Dad's feelings. Not more awkward than that photo, Dad said, getting all agitated and huffy again. That photo, Lila, is pretty damn awkward. I looked down, hit by a fresh wave of shame. More than all the drama at school, it killed me that Dad had seen me like that, passed out drunk with my boob hanging out of my dress, and whatever else he saw when I got home that night that I don't fully remember. He might have already guessed that I drank occasionally, but I'm pretty sure he didn't think I got shit-faced or had sex. Of course, the photo wasn't confirmation of the latter, but it certainly was a strong clue that I wasn't the perfect angel he thought me to be. Dad, why can't you try to have a little empathy here? If not for Finch, then for me, I said, using a big hot-button word at Windsor. Mr. Q often touched on empathy during assemblies, and the concept trickled down into a lot of class discussions.
Whoa, whoa, Dad said. I'm sorry. What? I'm supposed to have empathy for Finch in this situation?
Yeah, you actually are. For everyone. It's called forgiveness, Dad. Ever heard of it?
Forgiveness is earned, Lila. He's done nothing.
Well, isn't that why he's coming over? I shouted over him. I mean, what's the point of all of this talking with Nina and coming over to apologize if you've already made up your mind about him?
Dad shook his head, looking dumbfounded, then said, I just don't understand why you're not more pissed off by what this kid did to you. I really don't.
He paused, clearly expecting me to respond. But I had no response, at least not one I wanted to share with him.
Finch is the one who should be worried about tomorrow, Dad continued. Not you. But I bet he's not, because he's an asshole.
He's really not, Dad, I said. Then started to cry again, more out of frustration than anything else. There was no way I was going to be able to explain to my father that kids take photos like that all the time. Of themselves, of each other. I mean, it wasn't like Finch had posted it. It wasn't his fault that it had spread like it did. Now, the caption was a different story, maybe. But even that had a context. He'd been playing Uno and screwing around, and I think he was just trying to be funny. I'm not saying it was funny, but I think there's a difference between trying to be a dick and simply making a stupid bad joke, especially when you're drunk. At least, that's what I'd been telling myself. It was what I wanted to believe. Needed to believe. Dad slid closer to me and put his arms awkwardly around my shoulders, kissing the top of my head. Part of me wanted to push him away, but I really needed a hug. I'm so sorry, Lila. I'm just trying to do the best I can, he said. But this time he didn't sound like a martyr. Just a dad who really was trying. I know, I said, sniffling. And if it helps, I do think Finch's mother seems like a decent person. I think her heart's in the right place. You do? I said, my voice muffled against his chest. Dad backed up and looked at me, his brow all furrowed and sad. Yeah, she's worried about you. She is? I said, reaching past him for the wad of tissues on my nightstand. Yeah, he said. So I am giving her, and by extension her son, a chance tomorrow. Doesn't that part make you happy? I guess so, I said, blowing my nose. I just want this to be over. I know, kiddo, he said, nodding emphatically, like we were in perfect agreement, when we both knew that my version of it being over was very different from his. We sat in silence for a few seconds, and I could tell he wanted to say something else, but didn't quite know how to say it. So I finally just said, "Anything else, Dad?" "Actually, yeah," he said. "I did want to say one other thing. About your mother." "What about her?" I said. "Nothing really," he said, sounding uneasy. "Just that I don't think it's a terrible idea for you to visit her this summer. You're old enough now, and I trust that you'll make good decisions. She is your mother." "Thanks, Dad," I said. "I think I'll do that. I miss her." A look of hurt flickered across his face, and I realized, too late, that maybe I'd said the wrong thing. Then again, it was the truth. I did miss my mother. Maybe not even my mother, but the idea of having one around. Especially at times like this. When a father's idea of empathy just wasn't enough. The next morning, I got up early to shower and wash my hair. With thick, curly hair, I had to let it completely air dry to look halfway decent, which gave me plenty of time to agonize over what to wear. All of my stuff seemed either too going out, too churchy, or too everyday. Of course, I called Grace for advice, even though we'd already talked the night before for over an hour, breaking down the whole situation. In general, she was sort of on the fence about everything. Not nearly as pissed off at Finch as Dad was, but definitely still upset. As far as my wardrobe went, she simply said, "Don't try too hard. Go casual." I agreed, as we talked through my options and settled on white jeans, tight and ripped at the knees, with a blue silk tank I'd found at a vintage shop. After she wished me luck for about the fourth time, I hung up and put on very light makeup. I wouldn't have worn any at all. That's how much Dad hates it. But I banked on him being too distracted by his frantic cleaning to really notice the subtle application. Our house is always freakishly neat, but that morning, he really went to town, his OCD kicking in as he vacuumed and swept and Windexed every surface. At one point, he announced that he had to run an errand,
and returned with a bag of assorted pastries from Sweet 16th, which he proceeded to arrange on a dinner plate, before transferring them to a platter he used when grilling out. "The plate was better," I said, glancing up from my latest issue of InStyle, pretending to be calm. He nodded, looking a little busted, then put them back on the plate, walking it over to the coffee table. He put it down along with a short stack of napkins he spread accordion style. I took it as a hopeful sign that he would keep his word about having an open mind. At the very least, I knew he didn't hate Mrs. Browning, as Dad never goes to any kind of effort when he hates someone. At exactly 11, the doorbell rang. Dad took a deep breath and walked slowly over to the front door as I stayed put on the sofa and ran my fingers through my hair, breaking up the crunch of the mousse. My stomach was in knots. Now, out of my view, I heard Dad open the door and say hello. He then introduced himself to Finch and invited them in. I took a few deep breaths as they all came into sight, walking in single file. Mrs. Browning first, followed by Finch, then Dad. It was sort of surreal, the way it feels when you see a teacher at the grocery store or in another context besides school.
"Please, have a seat," Dad said, pointing to the sofa next to me and one of the two chairs.
He looked as nervous as I felt, but less pissed off than I expected. Mrs. Browning sat on the sofa beside me, and Finch took the chair diagonally across from her, as both said hello. I kept my eyes on her, too nervous to look at Finch. She was even more beautiful and glamorous up close than she'd been from the bleachers in the gym, although her outfit was casual. She was wearing a crisp white blouse, the sleeves rolled in wide cuffs, skinny jeans, and gold flats. Her jewelry was cool and layered, delicate pieces mixed with chunkier ones, gold mixed with silver, or more likely platinum. Everything about her was chic, but seemed effortless, as if she just woke up looking this put together.
"Lila, this is Mrs. Browning," Dad said. "And you know Finch."
"Yes, hi, hello," I said, without making eye contact with either of them.
"Would you like a croissant?" Dad said, looking at Mrs. Browning, then Finch.
It was the first time I'd ever heard him say the word, and it sounded weird. Too French or something. Finch eyed the plate like he wanted one, but shook his head and said no thank you. Mrs. Browning declined as well, rendering the pastries pure, awkward decoration.
"Can I get you something to drink?" Dad said,
which he probably should have offered first.
Coffee? Water?
"I have one, thanks," Mrs. Browning said, pulling a bottle of Evian out of her tote.
"Finch, something to drink?" Dad said.
"I'm fine, thank you," Finch replied.
Meanwhile, I just sat there, wanting to die, as Mrs. Browning announced that Finch had something to say to me. I nodded, staring at a wide gold bangle sliding up and down on her arm as she pushed her glossy blonde hair behind her ear.
"Yes," I heard Finch say.
He then said my name, and I looked directly at him for the first time.
"I'm really sorry for what I did," he said. "I was drinking, not that that's an excuse. It was stupid and immature, and a really awful thing to do. I'm really sorry."
"It's okay," I mumbled, but Dad interjected in a loud voice that it actually wasn't okay.
"Dad,"
I said under my breath, "stop."
"No," Finch said, "he's right. It's not okay."
"It's not," Mrs. Browning chimed in. "And for what it's worth, Finch wasn't raised like that."
"Like what?" Dad said, though he managed to sound more curious than confrontational.
"To be ignorant, or mean, or insensitive," Mrs. Browning said, her voice shaking a little as if she might cry. Something about her didn't strike me as a crier, though, and Dad's expression, "tough cookie," crossed my mind. Finch and I made eye contact for 1 second before he turned to Dad and said,
"Mr. Volpe, do you think I could talk to Lila alone for a moment?"
Dad looked speechless for a beat, then said my name in a question, as if asking for my permission. I nodded, keeping my eyes lowered.
Okay, Dad said. Nina and I can step outside for a minute.
His voice trailed off as they both stood. She followed him to the kitchen, then out the side door to the backyard. When I heard the door close, I raised my chin and looked at Finch. He gazed back at me with those sick blue eyes. When he blinked, I could see the curl of his blonde lashes. It made my chest ache, even before he said my name, as a low and whispery question. What? I said softly, my face on fire. Finch took a deep breath, then said,
I've been debating this, but I really think I need to tell you exactly what happened that night.
Okay, I said, eyeing the back door and feeling sick to my stomach. I couldn't see Dad or Mrs. Browning, but pictured them sitting together at the picnic table.
So, you know how we were playing Uno? He said.
Yes, I said.
Well, Polly and I got into an argument at one point. Did you notice?
I shrugged, even though I had.
Well, we did, and it was over you.
Me? I said, shocked.
Yeah, you.
Why? I asked.
She was jealous. You looked so hot in that black dress. She saw me looking at you, accused me of flirting, and she got pissed.
Oh, I said, a mix of emotions washing over me. Confusion that Polly would ever be jealous of me. Worry that I had caused an argument. But mostly just a strange, warm tingling at hearing him call me hot. In the past, a few boys had said as much in the comments of my Instagram posts, but no one had ever said it so plainly to my face.
Anyway, he said, one thing led to another.
His voice trailed off. Are you following? I shook my head, confused by his one thing led to another. Was he talking about his fight with Polly, or about me? I fleetingly wondered if something had happened between us, something physical. But there was no way. I would have remembered that. I remembered every look Finch had ever given me.
Listen, Lila, Finch said, leaning toward me, saying my name breathlessly. I wasn't the one who took that photo of you. I wasn't the one who wrote that caption. And I wasn't the one who sent it to my friends.
He bit his lower lip, then ran his hand through his wavy blonde hair.
Do you follow me?
What? No, not really, I said, my mind and heart both in a dead sprint. Suddenly a realization washed over me. Wait, was it Polly? Did she have your phone? He slowly but distinctly nodded.
Yes, she took it because she thought you and I were talking. Texting.
Why would she think that?
Because of the way we were looking at each other.
But we weren't texting, were we? I said, remembering that my dad had gone through my messages. Maybe he had erased a thread? Was that possible?
He shook his head. No, I mean, I wanted to. If I had had your number, I might have, but no, it was just eye contact. But Polly could tell. Women's intuition or whatever.
I nodded, because of course I could tell too.
So I got buzzed and kind of lost track of my phone.
And she used it to take that photo of me, I asked, wanting to make absolutely certain I was hearing him right.
Yes, Finch said. That's exactly what happened.
Wow, I said under my breath, mostly to myself.
What a bitch.
I know. I mean, she's not usually that kind of a person. She's really not. She's just going through some things. I looked at him, feeling skeptical. What issues could Polly possibly have? She was rich and beautiful, the female equivalent of Finch. Plus, she was dating him,
She had him. So what if he flirted a little with me? That meant nothing compared to their long-standing relationship. Or did it?
Anyway, we broke up over it, he finished.
You did? I said, my voice cracking. Because of me?
No, because of what she did to you.
My head spinning, I said, does your mom know that Polly did it? He shook his head and said, no.
Does anyone?
No, he said again. Why not? Why haven't you told anyone the truth? Finch sighed and shook his head.
I don't know. It's hard to explain and I just can't get into everything, but let's just say Polly has a lot of issues.
Like what? I said. Finch sighed and said,
I can't really say.
I stared at him, suddenly remembering rumors I'd heard earlier in the school year about an eating disorder and cutting. A very small, ugly part of me had sort of hoped they were true, if only to believe that nobody's life was that perfect. But a bigger part of me assumed that the rumors were lies, born from the same jealousy I felt when I scrolled through her glittery, glamorous Instagram. Now I believed them, and I couldn't help feeling sorry for her. More because she'd lost Finch than anything else. I told myself to get over that. She'd made her own bed. She didn't deserve my sympathy.
You have to tell the truth, I said. At your hearing, you have to tell them you didn't do this, that she did.
He shook his head, adamant.
No, Lila, I just can't do that to her. Beyond her issues. She's been in trouble before. This would be her second offense. She'd definitely get thrown out. I don't want that on my conscience.
I glanced toward the backyard again, wondering how much time we had before Dad and Nina returned.
You can't take the blame for this, I said.
Yes, I can, he said. Please respect my decision.
But you could get suspended or expelled. You could lose Princeton.
I know, Finch said. But I don't think that will happen.
What do you think will happen?
He sighed, shrugged, and said,
well, hopefully I go through this honor process and take the blame for the picture, but somehow I don't lose Princeton. And Polly gets help, and you don't hate me.
His voice was soft and sweet, the way boys almost never sound except in the movies with slow romantic songs playing in the background.
I don't hate you, I said, my heart skipping random beats.
Really?
Really, I said.
Okay, so given that you don't hate me, he hesitated, dropping his eyes. I was wondering if you might like to hang out sometime.
Lightheaded, I tried to process what he was asking. Surely it was only a theoretical question.
You and me? I said.
Yeah. You and me, he said.
When? I said.
I don't know. Soon? Are you free tonight?
I'm not sure my dad would be cool with that, I said.
A huge, huge understatement. Besides, aren't you grounded? I asked, having heard the rumors of his harsh punishment, that he wasn't allowed to leave his house for the rest of the spring and summer.
Yeah, but given the circumstances, I'm betting my parents might make an exception here, he said,
just as the side door opened and my dad and his mom reappeared.
Was that enough time? Mrs. Browning asked, peering over at us.
Yes, Finch and I answered in unison. She looked hesitant, but returned to her original seat on the sofa, as my dad stood nearby and offered coffee again. This time, Mrs. Browning said,
sure, I'd love one, thank you.
Cream or sugar?
No, thank you. Black's fine, she replied. Dad nodded and walked toward the kitchen, while the three of us just sort of sat there. I caught Mrs. Browning giving me a once-over, and then smiling at me. I love your top, she said. Thank you, I said, pleased. I got it at a vintage shop.
Oh, which one?
Starstruck, on Gallatin. Do you know it?
Of course, she said.
It's a little pricey, but sometimes you can find deals. Mrs. Browning smiled and said,
Yes, shopping can be a very strategic enterprise. Sometimes I think it's the hunt I like more than the actual purchase.
Yeah, I know what you mean, I said. Then I added, I really like your shoes. She did a little Dorothy There's No Place Like Home heel tap and thanked me as Dad returned with her coffee, handing her the mug. It fleetingly occurred to me that Mrs. Browning was being too nice, and I felt a dash of suspicion. What if she and Finch had come here with the goal to win me over? A good cop, bad cop thing, though this was two good cops. I told myself that I was being crazy as Mrs. Browning looked at Finch and said,
So, did you two talk?
Yes, he said, nodding.
And?
And it was good, Mom, he said, his voice loud and clear. Mrs. Browning looked at me as I dumbly echoed Finch.
Yeah, it was good, I said.
Dad frowned.
Good how?
Good in that he's very sorry for what happened, I stammered.
Yes, and I'd love the chance to talk with Lila a little more, Finch added. If that's okay with you, Mr. Volpe.
His voice rose along with his eyebrows.
Now? Dad asked.
No, Finch said.
Not now, but maybe another time.
Lila and I could get together and talk.
I held my breath, watching Dad process the request.
Are you trying to ask my daughter out?
Well, actually, yes, sir, Finch said.
On a date? Dad said, his voice getting louder and his face redder.
Dad, I said,
mortified that he was trying to label it.
He didn't say date.
But Finch rose boldly to the challenge.
Yes, sir. On a date. I want to get to know her better. And I want her to know me. I'm just asking for the chance to prove that I'm really not a bad person. Although, I know I've done nothing to deserve that chance.
I cleared my throat and made myself speak up.
Yes, you have, I said, my heart racing. You coming here today means a lot to my dad and me. Right, Dad?
I said, prompting him, wondering if he was going to be a total hypocrite and recant everything he'd said about giving Finch a chance. It took him another few seconds to finally answer.
I guess,
Dad grumbled, shifting his gaze from me to Nina, then back to Finch.
But you know this changes absolutely nothing about your hearing next week.
Of course. Yes, sir, Finch said. Besides, even if I wanted to get out of it, my mom would never let me. He smiled.
Dad didn't smile back.
But I don't, Finch added, want to get out of anything. I know I have to face my punishment.
Dad nodded, his jaw relaxing a little.
Okay, he said. So I have your permission to ask Lila out? Finch asked.
At some point.
Dad rolled his eyes, then took a deep breath.
I can't stop you from asking her out, he said. But I'd be very surprised if she said yes.
Chapter 14. Nina.
How do you feel? Asked Finch on the way home from the Volpe's house. We were in my car, but he was driving.
I feel great, he said. Really great. I'm so glad we did that.
I felt a wave of relief as I said to my son, Doesn't it feel good to do the right thing? The question was a little heavy-handed, but I couldn't help myself.
Yeah, he said, glancing over at me. It really does. And Lala, she's a cool girl.
He bit his lip, smiled, and slowly shook his head, the way he did when watching an amazing play in a football or basketball game. He was in stark contrast to Kirk, who always got up and clapped and yelled at the television. Yeah, she is, I said, thinking that there was something about Lala that seemed lacking in other girls I knew through Finch, Polly in particular. A certain genuine quality. Polly was always perfectly polite, saying all the right things to me, making eye contact and fluid small talk. Yet there was something about her that seemed almost too polite. Scripted, even.
Mr. Volpe was nice, too, Finch said.
I nodded, thinking of our conversation on the back porch. We talked about Finch and Lala, wondering how it was going inside. But we'd also discuss kids today in more general terms. How they hid behind their phones, saying things that they'd never say directly to someone's face, whether mean or sexual or just plain bold. We pitied them, and pitied ourselves as their parents. Tom never let Finch off the hook for what he'd done to Lala, but he definitely softened since the coffee shop. Finch slowed at a yellow light, then came to a full stop. His foot on the brake, he looked at me, big-eyed.
So, Mom, I think I'm going to ask Lala out at some point. You heard Mr. Volpe say I could, right?
Yes, I said, still surprised Tom had left the door open on that possibility.
But you also heard him say she probably wouldn't go.
He nodded, now staring up at the light, waiting for it to change.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll just call her. I really want to talk to her some more, he said as the light turned to green.
I understood the feeling. I wanted to keep talking to Tom, too. Conversation felt healing, and we all needed that. In any case, I think you should wait until after your hearing, I said. Part of me worried about how it would look, Finch manipulating the situation. On the one hand, I was tired of worrying about appearances, sick of making decisions based on what others might think. But on the other, this just wasn't a good idea.
Yeah, Finch said. I got it.
Also, just so you know, I'm going to tell Dad about our meeting and your apology, I said. As soon as he gets home.
Okay,
he said with a shrug. Your father and I have had some differences lately, but we need to be a united front, especially when it comes to you. Finch glanced at me, knowingly, then nodded, as if he, too, had noticed the sea change in our home and marriage, which seemed to have begun when Kirk sold his business. I thought about that time now. At first, the three of us were thrilled, giddy. But things quickly turned tense, even ugly, during the winding down period, which included parting ways with his top executive, Chuck Wilder. Chuck had no real piece of the business, as Kirk had put up all the capital and had had 100% ownership. But Chuck had put in a lot of sweat equity over the years, giving up more lucrative jobs because he believed so much in Kirk's vision. I think he'd also had an expectation of being included in a massive payout, and in my view, it wasn't an unwarranted one. But Kirk flatly refused, even after Chuck's wife, Donna, showed up on our doorstep, confiding that she was extremely worried about her husband's mental state.
It's not personal, Kirk had said. It's just business.
But it is personal, Donna had said. Y'all are friends.
I know we're friends, Donna, but I have to separate that from my business decisions, Kirk had replied calmly and coldly.
I remember feeling shocked, but also not. It was in keeping with Kirk's attitudes toward tips. He was perfectly capable of leaving a paltry amount, and in extreme cases, nothing, if he deemed the service bad. And effort didn't count. Ineptitude was ineptitude. In any event, Donna, just like a waitress or two along the way, ended up in tears. Kirk was unyielding. In the hours and days that followed, I had searched for signs of remorse, but Kirk's only reaction was indignation. How dare Chuck put Donna up to this shameless attempt at manipulation? He'd paid Chuck a great salary for years and owed him nothing further. But we made so much money, I remember saying. Why can't we just throw him a bone? $100,000 or something.
Hell no. Why would I do that? That's not the way things work. It was my capital.
His use of the word my instead of our made me uneasy, as I'd noticed that the more money Kirk made, the more likely he was to call it his. But I also remember telling myself that it really didn't matter, because he always had the best interests of Finch and me at heart. I compared our current situation to that one, and at first blush, they felt similar. Our family was still first. But as Finch stopped at another traffic light, I thought of a rather significant difference. With Chuck, Kirk had operated under a completely rational set of rules. Fair was fair. Rules were rules. But those same reasoned principles went out the window when they conflicted with Kirk's best interest. Suddenly things weren't so clear-cut. His black-and-white world had turned gray. In Kirk's mind, Finch was a good kid who had saved up enough points to be given some leeway. He had essentially earned one free pass. Or more precisely, a $15,000 pass.
So, what time is Dad coming home? Finch asked now,
clearly thinking about Kirk, too. Sometime this afternoon, I said, pulling my phone out of my purse to check the flight information, just as a text came in from him that read, Hey, do we have anything on the calendar tonight? No. Why? I wrote back. Thinking about staying another night. Getting a migraine and just want to lie down. We'll take an early flight tomorrow. Okay. Feel better, I wrote back, relieved that I could put off our conversation about Tom and the money a little longer. I gave Finch the update on his father's return, and he just nodded. Does Dad know you and Polly broke up? I asked.
I don't know, he said. I don't think I mentioned it.
Have you talked to her?
Not much. She's nuts, Mom.
I felt myself tense up, having long noticed that this was something men, and boys, obviously, did after any breakup. Dub their exes crazy, discredit them, make it seem as if the men were lucky to have gotten out of the relationship. In fact, Julie had once told me it was the most common narrative in the aftermath of a divorce, the justification men used for their own misconduct, a form of misogyny. Don't say that, Finch, I said.
Sorry, Mom, but there's a lot of stuff you don't know. She can really be a bitch.
Finch, I said, don't ever call girls names like that. It's so incredibly demeaning. I wanted to add, have you learned nothing from all of this? But I stopped myself. It was the most we'd talked in such a long time, and I didn't want it to end on a sour note.
Sorry, Mom, he said again as he turned onto our street. I just lost a lot of respect for her recently, you know?
Yeah, I said, nodding. I know how that can be. A short time after we arrived home, Finch found me in my office.
Hey, Mom, what do you think of me going out tonight? There's a pop-up show at 12th and Porter, he said. Luke Bryan's playing. I know I'm grounded, but after that conversation with Lila and all the drama with Polly, I could really use a night out. Please, Mom?
I hesitated. My gut told me to say no, but my heart wanted to say yes. We really had made so much progress today. I don't know, Finch, I said, still thinking.
Can I at least email Bob Tate? He pressed,
referring to Kirk's ticket broker, who could not only produce last-minute tickets to any show or sporting event, but also swing VIP passes or any other perk Kirk wanted.
See if he could get tickets?
How much do you think they'll cost? I asked, feeling determined to make him more aware of money.
I don't know,
Finch said, glancing down at his phone, typing something.
Maybe a couple hundred apiece since the venue's small.
A couple hundred apiece, I said, shocked. Not so much by the price itself, but by Finch's nonchalance.
I made myself say no, then compromised.
You can go out, but find a way to have some cheaper fun.
Fine, Mom, he said, looking disappointed.
For one second, I felt bad. It was so much more fun to make Finch happy, and my general overall philosophy was, if you can say yes, why not say yes? Of course, that was Kirk's philosophy, too, which had led us down the path of virtually always saying yes to our son, no matter the cost. After all, Kirk would point out, wasn't it arbitrary to pick a random amount of money as a cutoff? If we could easily afford an $80,000 car for Finch, why get him a $40,000 car he'd love so much less? Now I wanted to go back to that conversation about Finch's car, and so many other things. I wanted to list all the reasons why not for Kirk. He shouldn't take these things for granted. He needs to earn it. If the bar is already that high, where will he go from here? And most of all, there is a difference between privilege and entitlement. It was a concept that seemed as lost on Finch as it did on his father. What made Finch, as an 18-year-old kid, think he could reach out to his dad's ticket broker? That money was no object, although he'd never earned a dime on his own. I watched Finch type something else on his phone, then look back up at me.
I need to go get a haircut, if that's okay with you, he said, with a trace of an attitude.
Watch your tone, I said, although I knew my admonition probably fell under the category of too little too late.
Sure thing, Mom, he said,
sliding his phone into his back pocket as he walked out the door. More than 3 hours later, Finch returned to the house with the same shaggy hair he'd left with.
I thought you said you were getting a haircut, I said,
annoyed with both the state of his hair and the fact that he hadn't done what he'd said he was going to do.
The place is packed, Finch said, referring to the Bell Mead barbershop, where he always went to get his haircut. I waited forever, and then finally left.
You waited for 3 hours, I said, thinking that while the place could be busy, it was never that busy.
I had other errands to run, and then I hit some balls at the club with Bo.
Okay, I said.
And guess what? He actually has tickets to Luke Bryan tonight, and he offered me one of them.
Oh, really? I said, wondering if Melanie had anything to do with this, or if Bo and Finch had just finagled it on their own. It crossed my mind, not for the first time, that Bo hadn't been grounded for the party he threw. He was never punished.
Yeah, so can I go?
Something inside me told me to still say no, that the whole thing seemed a little fishy. But I'd explicitly told him that the price of the tickets was my issue, and now that was resolved.
Please, Mom, Finch said, putting one arm around me. Just this one night.
I sighed, then relented.
Okay, I said,
but your punishment resumes tomorrow.
Got it, Finch said, grinning and already texting.
I cleared my throat as loudly as I could, cueing him to look up at me.
Anything else you might want to say to me? I asked,
attempting lightheartedness, but also making a final point about the importance of basic gratitude.
Oh, yeah, he said. Thanks, Mom. Seriously, I really, really appreciate it.
I nodded, then stepped forward to initiate a hug. It felt a little awkward, as it had been a while since we shared any real physical affection.
You're welcome, honey, I said.
I love you so much.
I love you too, Mom.
As he began to pull away, I held on to him for an extra few seconds, whispering, please be good tonight. No more trouble.
No more trouble, Mom, he said. I promise.
Chapter 15. Tom. I've never been to therapy. Not because I don't believe in it, but because I can't afford it. Although I guess it would be more accurate to say that I would rather do other things with my limited disposable income. A few years back, however, I did start spending time with a retired shrink. Her name is Bonnie, and she's an older widowed lady with just the right amount of eccentricity who had hired me to build a treehouse for her grandkids. A couple weeks into the project, when I discovered that her fanciful Swiss Family Robinson design exceeded her budget, she suggested we trade services. At first, I agreed to the deal only to be nice, so that I didn't leave a half-finished treehouse in her yard. But I quickly grew to really enjoy our time together. I liked her open-ended questions, especially because I could work while I talked, which seemed a lot less intense than sitting on the couch saying all the same things. Anyway, we started with Beatrice and Lila, quickly touching on all my single father woes. That eventually led her to the subject of women and why I wasn't dating, and then my entire romantic past. She asked about my first time, how, where, and to whom I'd lost my virginity. I gave her the full scoop, telling her all about the summer I turned 15, when my buddy John landed us jobs at Bellmead Country Club. John lived on my street and grew up basically like I did, i.e. not exposed to golf. But somehow he developed a love for the game. I was pretty indifferent myself, but it was an easy, decent-paying gig. All John and I had to do was pick up balls from the range, clean the carts and clubs after use, and work with the caddies to get the members' bags ready to play. Incidentally, all the caddies at Bellmead were black. We heard the reason was because members didn't want their daughters falling in love with them. Rather than worrying about the obvious racist implications of this, John and I took it as an insult to us, i.e., why weren't members worried about their daughters falling in love with us white bagroom boys? Q. Delaney. At 16, Delaney was an older woman, a rich older woman, who drove a cherry red BMW convertible, a birthday gift from her father. As if that wasn't impressive enough, Delaney had a reputation for being somewhat advanced. We called it something a little different at the time. We saw the way she sauntered around the pool in the tiniest string bikinis, undoing her top when she sunbathed face down, exposing ample side boob, which we heard had also been a gift from Daddy. She loved to flirt and did not discriminate, shining her bright sexual light on everyone, married men, black caddies, and lowly bagroom boys. John and I both developed a crush on Delaney, viewing her as more potential sexual conquest than as a girl we thought we could actually date. At some point, we placed a far-fetched bet, $25 for every base one of us got to with her. Over the course of the summer, we managed to work our way into Delaney's social circle through another bagroom boy who knew some members, and the bet no longer seemed so unrealistic. Then one evening in early August, in addition to getting a blowjob from Delaney in the back seat of her convertible, I earned myself $75 from John. A true windfall. Unfortunately, word got out about our escapade, and I was fired. Delaney tried to intervene on my behalf, but her father quickly squelched her campaign for justice. He also told her she could never see me again, which only fueled our interest in each other, as those things have a tendency to do. We ended up going all the way a few nights later, which should have earned me another $25 from John, but I didn't charge him. It just didn't seem right to get paid for your first time, especially with a girl as hot as Delaney. "Did it cross your mind that this was a sexist, demeaning bet?" Bonnie asked as she sipped her tea. "Yeah," I said, sanding away. "I think it did. A little. But it wasn't her first time. Besides, I got the feeling she was using me, too." "So you were using her?" "At first, when I made the bet, yeah."
"But then?"
"But then I started to like her, a little."
"And how was she using you?" Bonnie drilled away. Also for sex? I like to